It's time for our weekly conversation surrounding the subdivision and FCS football. We're joined by FCS Nation host Kevin Marshall. Kevin, there's a couple of Dakota State schools that are on byes this weekend. What are you going to do with all that free time that you have now?
Well, we're actually going to give coverage to other people in the subdivision, which we do each week. I'm being a little facetious there. But it is like kind of trying to plan a show for a week without NDSU and South Dakota State playing. Is like going into battle with one boot off, right? So, I mean, it's, you know, we're going to be able to highlight some of the teams that are chasing those two. And some of those teams that are chasing those two seem to really have their stuff in a pile right about now.
When we look at last weekend, there's two different things. One is from the team in Grand Forks, the other one from Jace's alma mater. First, the squad in North Dakota from that was in Missoula. What happened in that last fourth quarter between the Grizz and the Fighting Hawks? Because something wonky went down, and a squad that looked like they were going to get out of there with the win really ended up kind of going sideways.
Well, it started well before the fourth quarter. If you're trying to go into Washington Grizzly Stadium and beat the Montana Grizzlies, you can't leave points out there on that field. You can't beat that bunch there doing that. North Dakota refused to kick two field goals when they were welcome, and those were points to be had. And they missed an extra point early in the game. So it started well before the fourth quarter. But I also noticed that at a really crucial time in the football game, and Montana fans won't like this, but at the very crucial time in the ball game in the fourth quarter, what had been a physical football game, especially with the handsiness of both sides' defensive backs on the wide receiver, they let them play the entire football game. And then it got real tight on that. When Montana had the ball, you had back-to-back pass interference penalties against North Dakota that they weren't called within the first three quarters of that football game. And then on what was the last play of the game, right, for North Dakota, you had the same kind of a thing happen and there was no flag. So you have two things can be true. It should never have come down to Montana having the ball with a chance to take the lead there at the end, because you should have taken points that you were welcome to have and go up by multiple scores on that Grizz team. And also the tightening up of the game by the fellas in the stripes didn't help North Dakota, but that's a good football team. They showed a lot of resilience, a lot of pride, a lot of poise. They just could not figure out a way how to get that done in the fourth quarter. And that's something that they're going to need to learn how to do.
Well, Kevin, when I was I was talking with a Grizzly alum this past week, and they really think that North Dakota is going to be a team to be reckoned with in the Missouri Valley, and that they could very well leapfrog some teams when it comes to the standings, because I don't believe that North Dakota plays Illinois State this year. And I know that the game against South Dakota is going to be down in Vermillion, which is always a tough place for them to play. But right now, as of this point in the season, you got to think that you got to swap out North Dakota or swap out South Dakota for North Dakota in those maybe those top three projections for this year, because so far this year it really seems as though North Dakota has shown that they belong towards the top of the Missouri Valley. Now, whether or not they can overtake Southern Illinois and Illinois State, that remains to be seen. But from what I've seen in North Dakota early on in the season, they could very well be 4-0 right about now.
I agree with you there, Jace, and I know that hurt you to say that a lot. So, you know, that's good on you, but don't count out the Yokes just yet. They lose the All-America running back, and they bring a guy in who rushed for 300 yards last week. Y'all heard that right. One individual rushed for 300 yards last week for South Dakota, L.J. Phillips. Hell of a back, and that offensive line for the Yokes can move some people in the run game. But what has really surprised me about them, it's just the lack of being able to get the football down the field in the passing game, which never was a problem for them really in the past. Aiden Bauman, we know he knows how to throw the football. We've seen him do it. So that's puzzling. The defense really balled their necks last week when they really had to and shut down Northern Colorado inside the 1-yard line. Was it three times in a row?
Yeah, I think so, right that towards the end of the game, yep.
Yeah, that doesn't happen unless that's a group that's pretty confident in what they're doing and what they're trying to achieve. It just needs to be cleaner for South Dakota. For North Dakota, there's some question marks, and they answer a lot of those questions by going on the road and competing with and probably should have beaten Kansas State and going on the road and competing and probably should have beaten Montana. But, man, we're a month into the season.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get no asterisks for should have beat.
Nope.
The only thing that they keep track of is who you beat.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not a moral victory for these bunches. They need to start piling up actual victories before we move them up a notch in the Missouri Valley Football Conference, because Southern Illinois is coming. If they can keep DJ Williams healthy, that's going to be a team that's going to be tough to beat as the weather gets colder. And you look around the rest of the league, and Illinois State, you know, is a top 10 team, and they're kind of flying under the radar. Not a lot of people are talking about the Redbirds. They're ranking them high, but not a lot of people are talking about them. And they may have the best quarterback, running back, and wide receiver threesome of anybody in the Missouri Valley Football Conference. It's just a matter of what are they going to do with them, and can they beat the teams that are traditionally in front of them that they're going to have on their schedule.
Now, Kevin, when you look at kind of around the FCS, then around the subdivision, outside of the Missouri Valley, is there a team that, you know, 4 weeks into this season that maybe has caught your eye? Or, I mean, I know how you and Stone Roll, you guys have got these guys pegged before, you know, we get even anywhere near the first couple games of the season. But is there anybody that's really stood out to you so far through this first four games of the season? Has anybody lit the world on fire that maybe we're not talking about or that we should keep an eye on?
Tarleton State, they've lit the entire planet on fire and the entire FCS on fire. Experienced quarterback, deep running back room, fast wide receivers, great defense. Tarleton State is not going to be a team that in the playoffs is going to kind of self-destruct towards the end like they did last year in the Dakota Dome, right? So that's probably not going to happen. This is an experienced bunch. That's a hell of a football team. And they're probably going to go through the conference schedule undefeated. This is a team that is going to clamor for the number one or number two seed if they are undefeated. And rightly so. And that's going to have to be a reckoning that we're going to have if the Missouri Valley teams, you know, do what they normally do, which is, you know, one of the Dakotas will beat the other one, and then the other one will drop a game to an Illinois State or a Southern Illinois, and you have a one- or two-loss Valley team versus an undefeated Tarleton State team. Montana State got their stuff in a pile last week, especially on the offensive side of the football. When they were able to do to San Diego what ranked Southern Utah wasn't able to do the week before, which is absolutely and completely shut them down on offense and go up and down the field on them and end just about every drive with an extra point. So those two teams are standing out to me. But the story of the subdivision, I think there's two of them so far this year, is West Georgia and Presbyterian. I know we talked about it last week. You know, when you're looking at people, how am I going to rank this week? Well, I'm looking at this point in the season for who's got Division I wins. And Presbyterian's got two of them over Southern Conference teams. And West Georgia, all they're doing is winning.
Mm-hmm.
So Presbyterian in the Pioneer League, and West Georgia is not eligible for the playoffs. They're transitioning this year. But that's still a hell of a football team. Joel Taylor's done a hell of a job. He's been an assistant for a long time. He was on the staff with Mike Houston on those Citadel teams in 2015 and 2016 that won back-to-back SoCon championships and beat South Carolina. So he is an experienced coach. West Georgia's playing very good football. And don't forget about Tennessee Tech. Bobby Wilder, I've said this before, hell of a football coach. Knows who he is, what he's about, and knows how to lead a football team. And Tennessee Tech is scoring a lot of points, playing good defense. That's going to be a team nobody's going to want to see come playoff time.
When you look at some of these teams that have just kind of entered the subdivision, and I know two of them off the top of my head that made the playoffs last year. You mentioned one of them already in Tarleton State, the other one Abilene Christian. Those teams down in Texas, they're not messing around. They're coming into the subdivision ready to make the transition as quickly as possible and become a factor in the subdivision. Is there anything in particular you see as to why they're able to come into the FCS and become successful? It seems like pretty early on. Is it that Texas oil money that's helping fund some of these programs? Is it anything in particular other than maybe just hiring the right football people and getting out of the way? What is going on and that is allowing Tarleton, Abilene Christian, maybe even obviously we look farther east in West Georgia for these teams to come into the subdivision and be effective right away?
Well, it helps that you're in such a football hotbed of a state as Texas, right? You don't have to go too far looking for players. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of FCS schools trying to come into your state to find players. So you're having to try to put a fence around where you are located. And Tarleton has done a very good job of that, as has ACU. So, you know, but then again, you look at Houston Christian and not so much, mm-hmm. right? So it's been kind of a mixed bag. So, I mean, used to be Houston Baptist, and, you know, I would think that, you know, that if you were them, that, you know, you'd be completely immersed in trying to keep your local talent. I think probably four people got what I said there. and you four people, you're really cool. Congratulations. But you have this state that has a lot of football players where high school football is super duper important. So it's going to be easier to be successful there. Carrollton, Georgia is not a hotbed of that, although Georgia has plenty of high school football players too. But it's not Texas. So I think what West Georgia has done has been extremely impressive. And I look for them to be a factor as they go to the transition period. Each and every year, it's only going to get better there if they can keep that staff together.
Mm-hmm.
As we approach this weekend, Kevin, maybe not necessarily even just within in the Valley, but what are a couple, two or three matchups that we need to keep our eyes on if we're Bison or Jackrabbit fans that are looking for something to do, and then also, I suppose, just anybody in general that should be watching these ball games and these teams as they begin to get their footing underneath them as we get to the end of September?
Well, Chattanooga is going to come Texas to take on, in our poll, number four, Tarleton State. Chattanooga, we all know this. It's not like they don't have athletes. They have those every year. They seem to be competently led. They just really can't seem to put it all together each year, which is just odd. It's a puzzling thing about why the Mocs aren't a Tarleton State type of football team every year, right? But they have an opportunity to make this non-conference schedule seem real successful when it hasn't been so far. If they can go to Tarleton and compete and come away with a win, I think we have a decent opportunity to grab another FBS scalp with number six Idaho going to San Jose State. That's a winnable football game for Idaho. They need to develop the passing game, though, and make that more of a threat. The War of the Wheels, always a good one. You've got number eight Southern Illinois traveling to SEMO, who Bison fans saw last week. So it'll be a pretty good way to look at Southern Illinois and think about how they're going to match up against your team if you're a Bison fan, as they're playing the same team that you played last week. Austin Peay is at Abilene Christian. That'll be a war. Austin Peay has a very, very good defense, and Abilene Christian has a plus offensive football team. Villanova's at Monmouth. Monmouth doesn't play defense. Villanova seems to be a little bit offensively challenged, so who knows what's going to happen there. And then as you get down a little bit, you look at Incarnate Word is going to be at Northern Arizona. And last year when you asked Incarnate Word people, well, who'd you beat? Why do you have such a high seed in the playoffs? Well, they pointed to Northern Arizona, who didn't beat a team with a winning record last year. So that was their big win of the year. Well, one of these squads is going to be able to circle this game this year and say, well, this is a team that we beat regardless of how Incarnate Word finishes, because somehow, and I don't know how, but somehow that team is still ranked by the people that know all the stats and the coaches. It absolutely is. I have no idea why or how, other than just most of those cats don't watch games. But that is a very good ball game. It's going to be a measuring stick. Going to Flagstaff to play in the walk-up Sky Dome is an experience. Northern Arizona is a good football team there, and Ty Pennington, their quarterback, is good. But looking around the subdivision, those are the ones that I really kind of have my eye on. And, you know, I'm excited for this week. With the Bison and the Jackrabbits both taking the week off, it gives the rest of the subdivision an opportunity to get more eyes on their games versus folks who are, you know, just looking to watch the number one and the number two team in the country play.
As we're rounding out our conversation this week, Kevin, what do you guys have on the docket for FCS Nation? Without those two Dakota schools that are in their bye weeks getting a little bit better.
Well, look, we're going to really roll out the Alex's Lemonade Stand initiative for this year, the challenge. The website will be up this week for people to donate. There'll be a list of who all the players are from around the country, and we're really excited about that. But we're going to take a look back at last week. We're going to give you our national players of the week from last week. We're going to give you our top 25, which we feel is the best one. We'll preview the biggest games taking place in FCS football, and then we'll pick them. And we'd appreciate it if y'all would tune in 8 a.m. on WDAY each week. Stone and I are very thankful and very blessed to get to do this. And it's all because of fine folks like y'all who run the show and great folks who listen. We're very appreciative.
Awesome. Thanks, Kevin. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, guys.